Window World is proud to present Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Simply the best for less at WindowsKansasCity.com.
It's better to give than receive, right? Well, when it comes to sports and friends, sometimes it's really great when somebody else is really, really happy with their team. There's nothing more personal in sports than rooting for your college team. And when you grow up in Texas, rooting for Baylor the last century or so has not been a very easy thing. Big state, too many bigger schools, the bully always kicks sand in your face. But not anymore. Baylor's on top of the college basketball world, and I'm so happy for my friend Jason King. Jason's been a college basketball writer covering every program in America for decades through some of the worst times ever for his alma mater, Baylor University. And we can forgive him a little bit if he puts his journalism ethics aside on this podcast, as he's as happy as anyone could ever be for their school. This was never supposed to happen for Baylor. When you go to school there, you get a great education, but you don't think your team is going to win the national title. But Baylor did. Jason is about to share some inside information about how this happened that has not been written or said anywhere else. Enjoy the insight and be happy for my conservative friend in the media, Jason King, on KKHI. Brought to you by Roberts Robinson, Chevrolet Buick GMC in Excelsior Springs. Customers at Roberts Robinson say, we just make it easy. If you get online at robertsrobinson.com, you can see the inventory that they have in stock, or you can give them a call on the phone and build your own car like I did and have it built right at the factory exactly like you like it. Any make or model. Chevy, Buick, GMC. Silverado, yes. Sierra, yes. Any of the many SUVs from Buick, absolutely. Build your own at robertsrobinson.com. Tell them you heard about it on KKHI. Elite Automation, designing and installing intelligent building systems that can save you thousands on your utilities. Know somebody in the mechanical contracting business? This would be a great partner to have for them. Find them online at eliteautomate.com or call Brad or one of the team members at Elite Automation, a great local Kansas City company, 913-766-2188. They even do consulting that they don't charge you for to help you save money. When you save money, they get a percentage of what they save you. It's an absolute no-brainer for anybody with a business building. Eliteautomate.com. And Back 9 Development, the Solheim Condominiums at Grand Mere. I was just talking to my buddy Steve up at Canyon Farms this weekend as we were playing a little bit of golf or hanging out, watching a little golf, not playing golf, watching a little golf at Canyon. He said he was looking for a place in Manhattan where his family goes and they go to all the games and like to spend a lot of time a little bit away from home and out at Tuttle Creek on the lake. I mentioned Back 9 to him, the Solheim Condominiums at Grand Mere, and he set up a tour. He's going to go check it out, Solheim Condominiums at Grand Mere. Condominiums between the first and 10th holes at Colbert Hills Golf Course begin at 249. One and two bedrooms, they're now adding a workout facility as well. So you've got it all, the resort pool, the workout fitness club, covered parking, elevators, it's all right there. Grand Living at Grand Mere, the Solheim at Grand Mere, online at back9development.com. Our conversations with a friend in the media that's conservative. They're hard to find, but he's a really good dude, and he went to Baylor, and he's really happy. The KKHI conversation is Jason King. Hit it!
The KK Has Issues conversation is presented by Buck Roofing, online at rbuckroofing.com. Sleep well knowing Buck Roofing fixed the roof over your head.
Our conversation is with longtime college basketball writer Jason King, who's been at the Final Four and probably lived out almost a lifetime dream. I think he's the only guy I know in the media from Baylor, which makes him smarter than all of us because Baylor's really hard compared to your typical run-of-the-mill state school, and he must be extremely excited that the Baylor Bears are college basketball national champions. What a great time to have Jason King back on Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. What's up, Jason? Hey. How you doing?
Hey, Kevin. Doing well. You're right. I was up in Indy for quite a bit of that. I was there for the Elite Eight and the two Final Four games. And yeah, I mean, 18 years ago, you know, when the murder scandal was going on and Scott Drew was taking over and, you know, inheriting all these penalties, and I never in my wildest dream would have imagined we would have seen what we saw Monday night, not just Baylor winning the championship, but doing it in just an absolutely dominant fashion over a team in Gonzaga that many were thinking was one of the best in history. And I think people are talking about that Baylor team as one of the better college basketball teams we've seen in a while. So it was a fun ride to cover those guys, and I'm still just kind of on cloud nine, I guess.
Well, it's just spectacular, and you know, paint me wrong because I blew this one badly. You know, I know what Baylor was, and I saw him earlier in the year and watched him, and I went, man, they're great. And then the COVID thing hit, and they got a little disjointed. They came back. They struggled in a win against Iowa State. They had some games, and they lost to Kansas. And then I watched them in the Big 12 tournament, and maybe this is the wrong barometer, but there's like a minute 30 to go, and it's still a game with Kansas State. And the brackets come out, and I'm like, there's no way I'm picking Baylor as my national champion. I just can't trust them. That's not really been their pedigree. Scott Drew and Baylor have been good for a long time, Jason. What was different this year? Why did they make guys like me look so wrong?
Well, I think, like you said, they've been good for a long time. I think in the last few years, they finally just hit a home run in recruiting the right kind of guys that all just piece together really well. I think that, you know, I've heard the term get old, stay old. They really have started succeeding with transfers, guys that may come in with a chip on their shoulder. And that's what this team was. I mean, everyone wants to talk about, oh, how's it getting these players? Well, I mean, I don't think you had to cheat to go out and get Maceo Teague from UNC Asheville or Adam Flagler from Presbyterian or Jonathan Chama-Chachua, who was averaging 2 points a game at UNLV, or Davion Mitchell, who was on the bench at Auburn, or Jared Butler, who I think was like the 90th rated recruit in the country. I mean, they had a good eye for talent. You know, felt like these were high character guys that would piece together real well. You throw in a 6'4 forward and Mark Vidal that they offered as an eighth grader. I mean, I think you just got to credit their recruiting and everything. And then on top of that, it's just the culture they've built there. You know, I used to be kind of one of those guys that got tired of like the players coach, you know, the happy, positive coach all the time. I thought at the end of the day, that didn't work. I like the hard asses. I like, you know, the Bill Self and the Tom Izzo's of the world that, you know, hold guys accountable and, you know, bench a guy for a half if he's not playing good D. I thought that really worked. And it still does a lot of times, but Scott Drew's, you know, coaching methods and philosophy worked there. You know, I mean, they started preaching this culture of joy, J-O-Y, Jesus, others, yourself. And those guys really bought into it. I mean, I would go cover their games and Jared Butler would go 2 for 15 and score 4 points. And he'd walk out of the locker room with a huge smile on his face because they won. You know, I mean, these guys really all cared about one another, and I think that paid off. And the other thing too is just, I mean, defensively, you know, it's so hard to find guys that really embrace and relish and get excited about playing defense. And this team, and last year's team too, which was 26-4. I mean, they were one of those teams. I mean, it started with Davion Mitchell and Mark Vidal, and eventually it just permeated throughout the whole roster. And that's the thing that stood out to me about that championship game, and one of the main reasons I think they won is, I think they just pimp slapped Gonzaga. You know, I mean, they just came in there and it was, I was just like, my God. I mean, you could tell 2 minutes into the game they were going to win. I mean, I think the game started off, you know, Baylor misses 2 shots, gets offensive rebounds on both of them, passes it out to Mitchell for an 18-footer, all because of physicality. Then they go into Finn on the other end. I mean, Drew Timmy was completely rattled and shook that whole game because of the, are vital and guys like that. I just thought that their energy and bounce and effort was so much better than their opponent. And I felt like Gonzaga, you know, just got hit with a wrecking ball and didn't know how to respond.
Well, Gonzaga's loaded with skilled players. There's no doubt about it, but it was noticeable how much more athletic Baylor was.
Athletic and strong.
Yes, like just muscled them around. And, you know, you get into these big games, you've been around this your whole career. You get in the big games, they get really physical, and you can't call a foul every time because the refs just aren't going to allow that to happen in a title game, are they?
Yeah, and I know. I just felt like those Baylor players had smoke coming out of their ears when they took the court. I mean, they were glad Gonzaga beat UCLA. They wanted to play them, you know. And then there's a couple of funny storylines that have surfaced. You know, like the morning of the game, I think Baylor was – I don't know I may be getting the details off a little bit. I think they were in their meeting room or something. And all of a sudden this delivery comes in and it was 6 cases of champagne. And it turns out, I think they had delivered it to the wrong room, but it was like another dining room. But like, I think they found out Gonzaga had ordered 6 cases of champagne. The coaching staff had. That's what, you know, and who knows if that story got made up to those players to motivate them. But then I know on the court before the game, like as they were going through warm-ups, a couple of Gonzaga players were chirping at him, like, you know, trash talking them before the game, kind of like the Morris twins did back when VCU played Kansas in the Elite Eight. Mm-hmm. And I remember the VCU players talked about how mad that made them. So, I mean, Baylor was ready to go. I mean, they were ready to go. And, it was really a spectacle to behold. I think, I mean, I can remember just on press row, that shot after shot and then turn after turnover they would force. I mean, writers were just looking at each other like, my God. Yeah. You know what I mean? A, it's like this is happening to Gonzaga, and B, you know, at the same time, just really, really impressed with Baylor.
Well, I would describe it. Sometimes sports is, I reduce it to really simple things, Jason, because I'm a simpleton, as you mm-hmm. know. But mm-hmm. I think sports is about being comfortable. And I would describe Gonzaga all season long as the most comfortable yeah. team I watched. They just always looked comfortable playing. And 2 minutes into that game, they had not had 1 second yet where they were comfortable, and they never mm-hmm. got there. Once they took them out of their comfort zone, their rhythm of transition, their passing, bounce pass to the basket for a layup, they were swatting those shots away. I mean, mm-hmm. once Gonzaga became uncomfortable, they had no idea what to do. I'm not sure they've been uncomfortable all year. And once it happened, you're right, it was over.
Absolutely. And at one point, the stats nerds, like, they talked about how Gonzaga had played 20 possessions of zone all year. And, like, I think midway through the first half or something, they switched to a zone. I mean, they hit the panic button, you know, right off the bat. And, it was something to behold. Like, even I think the weak link of Baylor's teams, if they have a weak link, if people always thought it was like Flo Samba in the paint, who, you know, averages like 3 points a game, and Jonathan Chamachachua, who's a younger guy, just kind of getting his feet wet. But even those guys, I thought, just really impacted the game down low. I mean, Drew Timmy for Gonzaga was averaging 25 points in his previous four tournament games, and 19 points on the year. He only got 7 shots. You know, they couldn't even get him the ball. I mean, it was just, it was awesome. You know, and the thing that's cool, you know, for me is a guy that went to Baylor. I mean, when Baylor joined the Big 12 in 1996, everyone said there's no way they should have been allowed the Big 12. They're never going to compete. You know, this private school is not going to make it. And, you know, for a long time, I mean, it was, you know, that seemed to be the case. Because if you remember how bad Baylor's football program was, obviously, and then the basketball team was not good at that point, and then the scandal hit, and that it went to the tank. And then, you know, I mean, eventually they hired Kim Mulkey. They start doing well. Art Briles had a huge run of success, and then Matt Rhule, you know, took them to like the number 4 or 5. So, I mean, obviously, and then Scott Drew started having success, 2 Elite Eight, you know, Sweet 16. And all of a sudden, it's just like this school. It's kind of like when you go to the basketball court, and, you know, there's that one guy, if you're playing pickup ball at the Y, and he's not any good at all, but he just guards the heck out of you. You go to get a drink of water, he's following you, and you're just like, God, get this little gnat away from me. You know, and I felt like that's how people treated Baylor. You know, like, they didn't respect him, but they were just kind of like that little annoying little dude. And then eventually that guy, that little gnat, he goes to the gym every day, and he keeps working hard while you're out, you know, rested on your laurels or partying or whatever. And eventually you come back to the gym one day and you're like, oh, this guy's kind of good now, you know, and it pisses you off, you know, because right. You're like, how is this guy beating me? You know what I mean? He works harder and all of a sudden he's better than you. I think a lot of schools, you know, South and Kansas and all those guys, they get kind of annoyed with Baylor because they still remember how bad they used to be, and it just
right.
bugs the heck out of them that they've gotten good all of a sudden.
But that's the beauty of being in a conference. Once you're in, mm-hmm. you're sharing the revenue. Everybody can do what they want with it, and Baylor's facilities are phenomenal. Yeah. And, you know, I think the best comp here, the real loser in this has been TCU, because they came in as a high-flying national football program, and mm-hmm. Baylor has just passed them in everything. I mean, everything. And they probably thought, okay, you know, we're better than Baylor. We're coming in this league. We're better than Baylor. We know that. We're going to be the best private school. We'll have this advantage, that advantage. We're in the Metroplex, blah, blah, blah. And Baylor has just left them in the dust. And and through real difficulties that you've chronicled, real scandals and difficulties, they've done it. Is there an advantage to being a private school? Has this helped them?
I think that's part of it, but I think that all the scandal and stuff, I mean, it's been awful things that have happened there without question. But at the end of the day, I mean, I think national media and people that aren't in the know or aren't there every day or aren't in Texas, you know, it's easy to think, oh, it's a terrible school and the culture's bad. It's like, no, a couple of idiots did a couple of dumb things.
Right.
I mean, you know, like, should the whole school's reputation be ruined because Carlton Dotson did what he did? I mean, you know, you think that, then you go on the campus, you see how pretty it is, you see that, oh, it's an hour and a half away from Dallas, and it's an hour and a half away from Houston, or Austin, and 3 hours from Houston, and it's in a great conference, you know, we'll give it another chance, you know, I mean, and there's a lot of things that they have to sell there, and most people, once they get on that campus, realize, hey, there's not a culture problem here, it was just a couple of idiots, and hopefully, the coaches that were involved in that, they leave, and you bring a guy like Scott Drew in, and Scott Drew for a long time, too, but had the reputation of, oh, this guy's a phony, or he's cheating, or he's not a good coach, and you got to remember, like, when he took that job, he was 31 years old. You know, he'd been a head coach for 1 year. I mean, you know, players get better. Coaches get better, too. I mean, he used to drive me mad with some of the decisions he would make in games, or the way his players would just kind of go out and play hero ball. And I thought he was kind of a mediocre coach, too. But, you know, over the last 4 or 5 years, I've completely changed my tune, and because he's gotten better, you know. And he's also recruited the kind of players that want to play team basketball. I mean, for a while, he was had the Isaiah Austin and the Perry Jones and the Quincy Miller, the kind of one and done guys, or at least guys with that mindset. And they weren't as coachable as the guys he's brought in now. And so they really have a good thing going now as far as just their culture and the vibe that kind of permeates around that program.
Okay. So two questions. What has been the reaction this week? The celebration, the euphoria, you've had a few days to reflect on it now and go back to what has happened. What's it all been like around the program, around Waco, around the state of Texas? What's the fallout been?
Yeah, well, I mean, I personally haven't been to Waco. I'm going to go for the parade next week. But just the snippets of video I've seen of how everyone went to the football stadium to watch the game live on the Jumbotron. And then, various bars. And so people are really excited. The championship gear is selling out like crazy that they put online. And I think the cool thing is like, you know, like I said, all around the country, there's this negative perception of Baylor. I mean, I think in Texas, it's definitely improved. But, like, to have them win in that fashion, and then to have guys like Jared Butler, all of a sudden he's on Good Morning America and the Today Show. People are seeing, like, man, this is a quality kid. Like, I'm telling you, Kevin, all these teams I've covered, like, there's always a bad apple. You know, there's always a guy that's just kind of a punk or, you know, all about himself. And, I mean, that's fine. That's what most teams have. This team, like, they are the best group of guys. I mean, they really are. I mean, Jared Butler could be, you know, a Big 12 commissioner one day, you know, or something like that. I mean, Mark Vidal, just so much charisma and just good dude, you know. So my point is, it's nice for Baylor to finally be able to trot out these guys and say, like, hey, this is the face of our school now. This is what Baylor is. It's not Carlton Dotson. It's not, you know, some of these other people that have kind of brought down the reputation. This is what it's really like there. So that's been cool.
That's really cool. Jason, yeah. I don't know Baylor sports history very well. I'm going to guess you do a little bit. Where
that's
does this rank?
Deep, but yeah.
Well, I mean, I know it's Texas, yeah. So football rules and everything in the state of Texas, really anywhere in the Midwest. And we know college football is much bigger than college basketball, but just give us a little 1, 2, 3 Baylor history. Yeah. Where does this rank? Is this the greatest moment ever, or is that reserved for special things that have happened in football?
I know. I think this is, you know, to tell you the truth, Kevin, I hadn't really thought about that until you just asked me. But like I said, the best, you know, when it comes to national championships, you know, Baylor women's basketball, I believe, has won 3 now with Kim Mulkey. But, you know, a men's national championship, I think, in the minds of anyone would surpass anything that Baylor has done, unless you have a football national title, which they don't have. So, yeah, I mean, this is got to be the number one moment in Baylor sports history. You know, I mean, Grant Taft had a few good football teams. You know, those teams under Briles were exciting, but they always, you know, fell just short. They would get in the big BCS games or whatever and kind of pee down their leg a little bit. So this would have to be it, without question. And like I said, when you top it with the quality of kids on the team and you know, character guys, I mean, it just makes it even better. So the thing is, though, it's kind of funny because as good as Baylor has been, I mean, it's Central Texas and Waco has still been slow to really embrace Baylor basketball as good as they've been under Drew now for about 7, 8 years, you know. And it was funny to see, like, all those people at the football stadium. I even tweeted, now the trick is to get these students to go to basketball games. I mean, they were ranked number one last year, and there were times when they wouldn't even sell out their game. I'm like, how do you have the number one ranked team in the country and you don't have a sellout? It's kind of embarrassing. So, and this year was kind of harder to tell because there was barely any fans were allowed in. I don't know how they would have reacted, but hopefully this will really ramp up the support. And, you know, Baylor's about to build a new arena in the next year. Probably be about 2 years before it opens. And they're going to downsize it in terms of seats. So right now, I think that Farrell Center seats about 10,000 people. So they're going to build a brand new arena. I think it's going to seat 7 or 8. And that'll really help the atmosphere, because then they'll be able to sell it out all the time. And I don't think right now the Farrell Center is considered a hornet's nest by any means, but maybe it will be moving forward. And it won't be the Farrell Center. It'll be a new arena. So
what does the Big 12 look like going forward? Baylor's national champion. Chris Beard just went to Texas. Kansas is about to go on probation. What does the Big 12 look like going forward? This is a title. This is a complete shift. It's huge, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly not going to say Baylor's going to own the Big 12 now or anything. But I do think when it just comes to momentum right now, because they're going to lose their top four guys, but still have some really good players coming back. They have a top five, top 10 recruiting class coming in. So I hate to say it, man. I think the Big 12 next year is going to be really mediocre. I thought it was overrated this year, and we saw that in the tournament with one team reaching the Sweet 16. But, you know, Kansas is going to return a good portion of their team. Now, like you said, they may not be eligible to compete in the postseason. I think them and Baylor would be duking it out for the title next year. And then, you know, West Virginia will be decent. But, God, you look at all these teams and what everyone lost, and then not a lot coming in. I think it's going to be one of the bigger – down years in the Big 12 that we've seen in a while. And that, you know, at least you have some interesting storylines, you know, with Chris Beard going to Texas and you know, new coaches at Iowa State and Oklahoma and Texas Tech. I mean, there's quite a bit to talk about, but I just don't see any really high quality teams coming out of the league next year, except for maybe Baylor and Kansas.
Let me rephrase the question then. I like to cut right to the core of this thing. We got Jason King here, and he's going to tell us straight. Let's fast forward after this. Forget this year, all right? The next 5 years, which coach has more Big 12 titles? Bill Self, Chris Beard, or Scott Drew?
Ooh. Not including this one we just had. No. I would say...
next five.
Yeah. Normally, I would answer Bill Self.
Right.
Because of all the built-in advantages from the tradition and the home court.
But he's complaining about recruiting. He said the NCAA thing's killing his recruiting.
And that's why I'm not going to answer it, because the recruiting is hurt. I think they are going to go on probation. I think they'll probably get at least a one-year tournament ban, if not two. That's going to hurt recruiting. Even some of the – I would lean Baylor, you know. I do think Beard is going to – you know, get that thing turned. The thing about Beard, though, and I do think he's great. I do as a coach. That, like, you know, in the last 2 years, they've been a 500 team in the Big 12. You know what I mean? And I think the stat is against teams that finished in the top six in the Big 12. Texas Tech's 8-16 against those teams in the last 2 years. So I mean, and the reason for that was because I just don't think they had very good players. You know, that he didn't recruit great, or he took some chances on transfer. They didn't pan out. He had some high-profile guy. Beard's hard to play for. I mean, he is. I mean, he's kind of like Self in a lot of ways, in terms of just he comes down hard on those guys, and, you know, you got to be tough to play for him. Some of those guys he was recruiting, Namari Burnett or whatever, who just went to Alabama, they didn't want to mess with that. So he's tough to play for. I think he'll do great at Texas. I think it was the right move, but it may take him, you know, a year or two to get him going.
All right, let's finish with something fun, and I've mentioned this on the podcast a couple times before. Mm-hmm. You are a lot like me. You're conservative. You like sports bars, a cold beer, some chicken wings. You like to bet on sports. Mm-hmm. You're from Texas. I'm from Kansas, but there's really not that much difference between you and I in many ways. All right,
well, so you don't like wings either, though.
I don't. I do. That. I just don't like buffalo wings. I like barbecue wings. I like fried wings. I like teriyaki wings. I like all kinds of wings. Buffalo sauce is just not my thing. So I do like wings. let's do this. You were at the Big 12 tournament and then the NCAA tournament. And you, obviously when you're on press row around the media, anybody that's conservative is an outcast. This was pretty easy for you to spot this year. Share with me a little bit of what we talked about earlier, what your experience was with some of the other reporters.
It was unbelievable. I mean, I do like the term Corona bro. I think it's pretty funny. I mean, listen, here in Texas, you know, we had 3 months starting around March, you know, of last year, like everyone, where we were pretty locked down. But around May and June, I mean, gyms were open again, the restaurants were open again. So I've been living a pretty normal life for the most part. My son played 50 baseball games last summer while other states weren't playing at all. You know what I mean? But he played football, he's playing basketball. So things have been pretty normal here for a while. And so to get back on the road and see like people just still so in panic mode, you know, and I hate to say it, you know, I go to the Big 12 tournament and, you know, I was excited about being in Kansas City. I go to the T-Mobile Center, and the couple of national media members that I've known forever, one of them comes up to me. He's got literally two face masks on. One of them's like the Darth Vader mask. You know, it's not just a little nurse. It's not like the little nurse's mask, you know, that everyone wears. It's like the one that it's like plastic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then over that, after two face masks on under, like right over his mask, over that he's got the plexiglass, you know, welding shield or whatever, you know, I mean, over his face. And he comes up and tries to talk to me. And I'm like, dude, I can't hear you. Like, he's like, you know, it's like talking to Charlie Brown or whatever that voice is, you know, in the Peanuts cartoon. And then, you know, there's a break in between games, and he's goes over to eat his lunch or his dinner, I guess it was. And I was like, where is he? And he's back in the corner, like facing the corner, like a dunce in school, you know, where they'll sit in the corner. He's sitting in a corner. He's brought his own little cooler, and he's got like six freezer bags that he has lined up, and you could tell he's rolled his food up real tight in those bags. He had like cookies in one, and one with carrot, and you know what I mean. It's just like, and he's not facing anyone. It's like, I'm going to remove my mask and eat it, but I'm not going to face the crowd. I'm going to turn this way.
Unbelievable.
And then he goes and asks a question on the post game Zoom, and he doesn't take any of his shielding off, and so like, they had to say, excuse me, can you repeat that question? And it was just like, oh my God. I even took a picture of him I'm going to send it to you. I don't want to say his name because he's a friend of the program. And like,
well,
you know,
sure.
But
my point is,
I don't care. He deserves ripping off for this crap.
You got to send it to me. You got to send it to me.
Yeah.
I think what you and I would agree on, and most of this audience would agree with, is, look, I don't make a living or live my day every day feeling sorry for people. Everybody is who they are. And we're allowed to be who we are. But don't you, in a way, if somebody is that worried, scared, or, you know, thoughtful, and they're going to that much trouble, don't you feel bad for somebody that is like that tight?
Yes, absolutely. And my deal is just stay home. I mean, it's just, if that's how you're going to be. And a couple other quick examples. I was wordy on that one, but it was just, so at the Final Four, I see this Nashville writer that I know from Yahoo, and it was just kind of awkward. So and he's in the hotel lobby, not a close friend of mine, but I just respect him. I mean, no, I shouldn't say I respect him, because I really don't. But anyway, I'm passing him in the lobby. He's a good, I put it this way, I respect his writing. He's
okay.
A solid writer.
I got you.
Anyway, but nothing else about it. So anyway, I'm passing him in the lobby. I'm like, what's up, man? So I just like stick up to do the fist bump. You know what I mean? Because I know he's also a big Corona bro, which I already knew. So I do try to do the fist bump. He's like, oh, hey Jason, and he like kind of pauses awkwardly, and he's wearing a long sleeve like hoodie, so he pulls the sleeve of the hoodie down over his fist and fist bumps me that way, because he didn't want to like so there was no skin to skin. And then, and like immediately after that, he walked over to the, because it was right by the hotel check-in desk, he walked over to the desk and like, you know, got the hand sanitizer and started rubbing his hand. I'm like, I don't have cooties or anything. You know what I mean? It was just unbelievable.
Wow.
And then, like, at the games, I mean, I don't know if you listen to the post games, but I mean, every time Scott Drew or any of those coaches were on the Zoom, I mean, like, Dan Wolkin is asking a COVID question. You know, it's like, you know, in this age of COVID, there's COVID.
Right.
And it's just like, get over it. These guys, they wanted this season canceled so bad, football too. And everyone's like, why would you say something like that? They're sports writers. They make a living covering sports. Why would they want it canceled? You know, and I get that. And I'm not saying they hate sports, but everyone took a stance on COVID back in March and April on Twitter very publicly. And then, you know, when things started to turn, it looked like, you know, we were going to have a season. Then those guys looked like they were wrong. And to me, that's the deal. They didn't want to look wrong. They didn't want to.
Right.
They didn't want it. So that's why I think they kept pushing their narrative. So they keep saying, I told you so. And that superseded everything. And then it turns out they were wrong. We had a football season. It went, you know, there was some glitches, but it went off fine. You know, I mean, and
here's how bad it was, Jason. Season. Here's how bad it was. They were predicting athletes in America were going to die. Not just we can't have the season. They're like, we can't have a season because they're going to die. And right. Now, wait, I'm waiting for the story of the athlete that went to the hospital with COVID because I don't remember one.
No one died and no one even went to the hospital.
That's what I'm saying. Nobody went to the hospital. I'm waiting for one story about one athlete in America anywhere. Besides the basketball player, when it first happened, the guy with the Utah Jazz, Rudy, what was his name? The very first guy.
Did he go to the hospital?
They were scared to death. They didn't know what COVID was. So they tested positive for someone. They rushed him to the hospital and quarantined him. But it was not because he was too sick. It was just they didn't know what else to do. Then we quickly learned you can't take everybody to the hospital for this thing. Lock it down.
Yeah.
I can't think of one athlete ever that went to the hospital. Not one.
No. And if you do remember, there was a Florida basketball player that collapsed. And everyone's like, oh, and that was their moment, right? Okay, finally it's happened. COVID's got someone. And that was the narrative. And then like 3 days later, they were like, oh, it wasn't COVID.
Wasn't COVID. Unbelievable.
Right. I did get COVID. You know, a lot of players, obviously, Baylor, tons of them got it. So even the narrative they were teaching now is like, well, we'll see. And like, sometimes like the effects aren't felt till 5 months later. And we'll see if, you know, these guys that got COVID 5 months later, if all this strenuous activity will affect them. I'm like, whatever, dude. It is just.
Wow.
Yeah.
I glad I wasn't there covering that with you? That's it was great to be at home or a sports bar. I don't care. I'll go anywhere.
Some good laugh. Like I was purposely like not wearing my mask on press row and like, I was loving the dirty looks I was getting. But look, I'll say this now, like the mask thing, I don't really care to wear it, you know, but I'm not one of those guys that just gets mad when someone that tells me put it on. I just put it on and move on. You know what I mean? Like why argue, you know, like in my gym, I had to wear it while I worked out for 5 months. I got used to it. I'm used to the mask. I mean, but what I hate are those people that are I don't know, Kevin. Just so mad at you if you don't have it on, or they just think that you're the antichrist if you're not wearing it. Like I don't wear it until someone tells me I have to. And then when I do, I put it on and
work. I do too. I've had a couple things the last few days where I just walk in, it's in my pocket. If somebody says something, I will. If I walk up to engage them or if I walk to a checkout line or something, I'll put it on when I know I'm going to be within 3 or 4 feet of somebody. I will. But as I'm just walking around the store, absolutely.
You know, I want to be totally respectful of, you know, older people, or if I'm in a Walmart or a Hallmark card, whatever, you know, where you're going to be around that. But if I'm just out, like, walking down the street or in a gym, so I'm just not doing it. And that's the other thing, too, about the tournament. It was just so annoying. Like, it's such a charade. Like, I think when they were first, it was something when they were cutting the nets, they made the players put on a mask as they climbed the ladder and they took it off and handed it to the guy and then put it back on. And so, and it's so stupid, like with some of these post-game interviews they're doing. It's like, oh, let's make sure that the interviewer and the player are standing 6 feet apart. He's got a boom mic.
It's so stupid.
It's just like, come on.
It's stupid.
Come on.
No, you're right. It's all for show, man. It's all – we call it here on this podcast, I call it COVID theater. That's all it is. COVID theater, man. Well, Jason,
here's an interesting thing, though. Like, here's some breaking news that no one knows. Is like, I don't care that I'm telling this, but like, I found out I was sworn to secrecy on this a few days ago, but I don't think it's a big deal. But like, all of Baylor's players and Gonzaga's players had been vaccinated within like a month of that game. Like, it was like during that ice storm, like Scott Drew found a clinic like an hour and a half away from Waco that like had a bunch of extra shots. You know, and he went, because I think with those shots, like I think they go bad, don't they? Like if you don't use them in a certain couple of days. So like when in the ice storm, like people couldn't get in, like people weren't driving. So like all these clinics were like, oh, we got this excess. So he took all his guys in and got them vaccinated. He didn't want people to know initially because everyone's like, oh, why should you have this privilege? You know, because at that time, not everyone could just easily get a shot.
Right.
And then I know Gonzaga did the same thing. Supposedly they went to some Indian reservation or something. I don't know the details, but I know Baylor's players got their second shot the Monday of the Big 12 tournament. And, you know, sometimes they say that second shot can kind of set you back a little bit energy-wise for a day. I'm not saying that's why they played close, but that they just, you know, Baylor was like, we are not going to go to this Final Four and have Jared Butler come down with COVID the day before the game. You know what I'm saying? I don't blame them. I mean, like, just that, you know, that would suck to get to that level. That's what Kim Mulkey was saying when she made her little comment. It would suck to get to that last game or that final weekend and have your whole team altered because of something like that.
Well, she was awesome. Her comments were great. Yeah. And we have now figured out the riddle and the puzzle of how Kansas State took the game to a minute and a half left against Baylor at the Big 12 tournament. Now I know it was the second shot. Well, everybody feels it. No, 100%. That's excellent. Maybe. I'm glad I know this now.
Maybe, but I'm not making an excuse because, look, when you beat a team handily like Baylor did twice, two things happen. One, it's like you're not quite up for the game, and B, Kevin, Bruce Weber's a good coach, man.
You're looking at this all wrong. You're looking at the basketball programs. I'm looking at my failed prediction in the NCAA tournament, and now I can justify it. Thank you very much. It was solely based on the fact that K-State got to the final minute against Baylor in the Big 12 tournament, and I said they can't win this thing. So once I went all in that Baylor can't win it, now I've got an excuse why. I personally need this.
It makes you look a little better. It makes you look a little better, maybe. But K-State was a different team the last month of the season. They got a lot better.
They're better. Jason, I'm so happy for you. I'm so happy for you that Baylor won. I know that, you know, it's not what you live and die with, or it's not family, it's not life and death, but it must just be a real thrill, and I'm so happy for you, and I can't thank you enough for joining us again here on the podcast. I'm a big fan of yours, and anytime we can be of any help, and if you go to write that Baylor National Championship book, let me know. We'll get you on. We'll talk about it. We'll see if we can sell a few copies. How's that sound?
Sounds great, Kevin. I appreciate it, man. I'll be up there soon. We're going to go get some wings. I'll get buffalo. You get barbecue. And we'll talk a little bit more about it.
On me. Sounds great. Jason King, thank you, sir.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. For additional VIP-only podcasts, live streaming of breaking news, sports wagering tips from the experts, and in-person special events, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron for as little as $5 per month.
This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media Incorporated.